Mayor Adams said, who's the law and order man himself, former police officer, said that Giuliani is seemingly the possible criminal.
One needs to remind former Mayor Giuliani that falsely reported a crime is a crime. From what he stated about being punched in the head, felt like a bullet, what he stated, that was a lot of creativity. I think the district attorney should, he has the wrong person that he's investigating. To falsely report a crime is a crime. If that video wasn't there, then this person would have been charged with punching the former mayor. He'd been charged with all of these offenses that did not materialize. I saw that video, and I'm sure all of you who saw the video, you have to ask yourself, he stated if he was, he didn't feel so heroic or whatever, he would have not, he would have fallen to the ground. That was a lot of creativity there. Falsely reporting a crime is a crime. If you don't have a video and someone of prominence making allegations against you, you should not have to wait for a video to determine you did nothing wrong. He's a former mayor. I think he's irresponsible for a former mayor. And when I heard the report that he was punched in the head and other things, when I heard that, I said, you know, why would someone assault the former mayor? Now, what if we didn't have the video? This person would have been accused with a serious crime when all he did was pat the guy on the back.
A couple of lessons from that incident, that's for sure. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, June 28, 2022. The news is produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
Welcome to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lang. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency. In recognition of Pride Month, we decided we would rebroadcast queer voices in the climate movement.
This week, we have joining us James Comiskey and Michael Kozik. They are both active members of Extinction Rebellion Boston, and they have developed a talk called Queer Voices in the Climate Movement. They've been giving it all around Extinction Rebellion up and down the East Coast of the United States, well, by Zoom, and they've adapted it to radio to share it with us. So, James and Michael, please take it away.
Thank you so much for having us. We're excited to be here. I'll kick things off. I'm James. We're talking about how the climate crisis affects the queer community and how the queer community is poised to combat it. Michael is going to talk us through some specifics about how queer people particularly experience the repercussions of the climate crisis.
Thanks, James. One of the major impacts of climate change is sea level rise, which continues unabated. And I'm sure many people are familiar with this. But what you may not be familiar with is that sea level rise is going to inundate places that queer people frequent and are places for renewal. For example, in Provincetown, one of the most important queer spaces in the country, both for year-round, part-time, and vacationers who are looking for a place to escape trans and homophobia, by 2050, most of the town and all of the beaches will be flooded. Even if individual homes are spared, Commercial Street, the location of town offices and most of the major businesses and many homes, will be overwhelmed by the sea. And as the Boston Globe reported a few years ago, climate change is already impacting Cape Cod businesses, their homes, natural spaces, which is putting wildlife, people, and dwellings in jeopardy. And in Boston, by 2050, historic LGBT neighborhoods will also be threatened by sea level rise, including the South End, Bay Village, and the Fenway. New York City's LGBT neighborhoods like Chelsea and the West Village are also under threat. In Florida, South Beach, another queer community, is particularly vulnerable to rising sea levels and storms. The city is already having to raise street levels, install stronger pumps, and other mitigation strategies because of sea level rise that is already flooding the city from below and above. Overall, coastal cities and towns are up to three times more LGBT dense compared to the U.S. average. These places are at a high risk because of climate change, San Francisco, Seattle, other cities all across the country. And there are compounding issues for queer people. According to one study, while we make up just 7% of the population, 40% of homeless youth are queer. 27% of the LGBTQ population is food insecure compared to 17% for non-LGBT people. 22% of the LGBT population is in poverty compared to 16% for non-queer people. All these are higher rates than the non-queer population. And when disaster strikes, these are the people who are most vulnerable. No shelter from natural disasters, no fallback plans or families that they can rely on. And within the queer community, Black and trans women see even higher rates of homelessness, food insecurity, and poverty. So, for example, while 22% of the LGBT people experience poverty, almost 30% of trans women experience poverty, and 30.8% of Black LGBT adults experience poverty. So James is going to talk a little bit more about the social political implications of all this.
Extinction Rebellion uses tremendous art and dancing. If you've heard of the disobedience in the streets, and costuming, if you've seen the Red Rebels dressed in their flowing red robes that represent the shared blood of all species, and theater. We use drama and humor and gravity and joy to engage people and to create something that the media wants to cover and that people want to engage in as well, because we've been sort of touting the doom and gloom for a long time, and that has succeeded in bringing in some people, but it doesn't speak to all. So these are all skills and talents that the queer people fully embody. When you think of drama, humor, gravity, and joy, you know, the queer people fully represent those emotions. If you think of pride starting as a rebellion, that is now a vibrant and colorful and loud celebration. The gravity of the ACT UP demonstrations and die-ins that queer people did during the AIDS crisis. When you think of fun and visual and moving disruption, queer people have so much to bring to the movement in that regard. But perhaps most importantly, queer people have used nonviolent civil resistance, art, and drama to affect political change before.
Yeah, and this is the exciting part. We have been in these kinds of situations where we've had to wake up society, bring people's attention to issues that need to be addressed. So, for example, during the suffrage movement, lesbian and bisexual women were essential to that movement. Icons like Susan B. Anthony, Carrie Chapin Catt, and others were queer. According to historian Suzanne Weir, non-heteronormative relationships were just part and parcel of the suffrage movement. And then in the environmental movement, Rachel Carson, the founder, basically, of the modern environmental movement, she was queer. Bayard Rustin, a queer Black man, was one of the organizers of the 1964 March on Washington, where MLK delivered the I Have a Dream speech. Rustin later became an activist on HIV/AIDS causes. And of course, in 1969, we fought back against oppression in the Stonewall riots. And by the mid-80s and 90s, as James mentioned already, ACT UP and Queer Nation were using nonviolent civil disobedience tactics to force society to recognize the AIDS crisis and create visibility for the queer community. So we are calling upon this history to act against the climate crisis. We must act. And as someone has said, there's no pride on a dead planet.
I was really struck about the impact of climate change on queer communities, which I had never really thought about until I saw your materials. The high rates of homelessness among lesbian youth, gay youth, trans youth, the location of queer community spaces on coastlines and in cities that are places that are poised to flood. I mean, if I could venture a summary, it's looking like queer people in queer communities are poised to be disproportionately impacted. And yet, queer communities have these characteristics that are very well poised to contribute to climate activism.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think about some of the places where we have to go to get away from trans and homophobia, you know, it's sort of the ends of the earth. You know, Provincetown is the furthest possible place you could go in Massachusetts. Key West is the last, island down in the Florida Keys.
I think many people will be surprised to hear about queer rates of homelessness and poverty and food insecurity, because there's sort of this like social myth of gay affluence and the way that queer people and especially gay men are portrayed in media and television is this well-dressed, intelligent, social being. And sure, that's true for some of the queer community. The reality is that many queer people are kicked out of their homes and, you know, sent to the streets because they don't have people that will accept them. And so they see higher rates of homelessness and drug use and poverty that I think people don't always realize or at least pay attention to.
I think that's an important critique that you all make. So I want to raise the question, why start off with your conversation with what really are privileged spaces, right, where folks go to vacation where they get away because they have the money to? I've partied in these places, but they're very privileged. We're a lot of working class and certainly not poor LGBTQ folks go.
Yeah, well, some of these are the places that we've already seen these effects, right? We've already seen the impact so quickly. And, you know, as we mentioned again, New Orleans has seen those impacts. Houston has seen the impacts with Hurricane Rita. New York, you know, so the impacts are pervasive, but you can physically see the damage in a place like Provincetown, where the landscape has already changed. And it's a preview of what's to come for Boston, New York, Miami, other places. And, you know, so part of it is really just helping people to understand what's already happening and also where things are going to come very shortly.
Yeah, I also think about the heat islands in a lot of communities of color where a lot of gays and lesbians and bisexuals and so forth live. And so there's no trees. So there's no shade. They're hotter spaces. Part of not being able to see the effects of climate change in those spaces is everything to do with, for example, segregation, right? So that we don't see the effects because we're not looking, because we're not interested. And this is not comment on what you're saying. It's really just thinking about how climate change is imagined anyway. There's a tendency to think about the effects of climate change on the most privileged.
I think all that's a wonderful point. I think also that speaks to the sort of the moral imperative, I guess, of communities and BIPOC communities and queer communities, of the people that do have the liberty and the time and the financial stability to be putting in this work. To carry those members of their community with them, because we can't expect someone who's in crisis mode and who's on the streets and in food insecure to then be standing with us. Obviously, that's the goal, right? That's what we want. Sure. And their voices need to be included in it. But the reality is they just can't put in the work in the same way that, I mean, Michael and I are two white male cis gay men. So, you know, we have certain privileges coming from where we come from to put ourselves on the line like that. But we have to carry the responsibility of the rest of our community that can't do that.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on Pacifica Radio Network, brought to you through WBAI New York. This is Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney, and we are talking with James and Michael from Extinction Rebellion Boston about queer voices in the climate movement. After all, it is Pride Month, so happy Pride Month, everybody.
Well, James and Michael, thank you very much for being with us today and for sharing yes. Queer voices in the climate movement, the radio version.
Thank you both for having us.
Thanks.
So, friendly listeners, as you know, WBAI has a radio transmitter, and this transmitter has a monthly rental fee. WBAI, it is perhaps the major expense that WBAI has, major recurring monthly expense that WBAI has. It ain't cheap, but it is how they broadcast. It's how we broadcast. It's how our voices get onto the air. And so, at least once a month, we are asked to, and we are happy to, ask you to help us continue to exist by donating something, a little bit, a lot, something to WBAI.
That's right. And the tower rent, by the way, just in case you don't know, it's $17,000 per month. So that's to make sure that everybody can hear the news that we're projecting out into the community, making sure the community is connected, making sure that we're addressing issues that the community is concerned about. And so that's $17,000 a month. And with your donations, we are able to stay on the air. So we want to keep it going.
If you happen to have $17,000 to cover a month, that's great, but you probably don't. So maybe you have $25 that you can put toward this. And if every listener does, then we're in decent shape. We're going to say this more than one time about just exactly how you can donate. But here's how you can donate: WBAI.org, the website. And if you scroll just slightly from that page, the very first thing as you scroll down is a big banner that says, "Let's enjoy our future together." It's got little pictures of radio transmission towers. You click on that, and it takes you to the donation page. Now, when you make a donation, you are invited to say which is your favorite show. And it might be really nice of you to click on Extinction Rebellion Radio or XR Radio, as to indicate that that's your favorite show. It kind of gets us in good with the station management, you know?
That's right. And you become an Extinction Rebellion buddy. Extinction Rebellion gives you news that is concerned about keeping us going in the future. You may have heard recently, just to drive the point home, you may have heard recently that New Mexico is experiencing two of its biggest wildfires on record. It has been raging for over a month. And you probably, you know, you heard about it, but, you know, the news presents it as, oh, this is an interesting issue, almost disconnected from this larger structural problem. But we connect the dots. Now, in their article about these fires, the New York Times reports that, quote, 3 million acres of land, about almost the size of Connecticut, have already burned this year. It is only June. That's in the quote. It's only June. And so, you know, we know that this is a combination. These kinds of fires are a combination of bad land management, but it's also a problem of climate change. And so we bring you this kind of news on a regular basis. It's just not a one-off.
Every week.
We talk about the things that are driving us towards extinction, and not just us, but, you know, other sentient beings as well. And so when you support this show, you make sure that we are always talking about the most critical issue facing the planet.
And you'll hear it from us, connecting the dots, as you put it, Elise. We try to connect the dots all the way through from the dryness in New Mexico, for example, to global climate change, to dependence on fossil fuel use, to necessity, to lack of political action to correct that, to the necessity of direct action, the necessity of what, as Extinction Rebellion keeps on saying, people in the streets, nonviolent civil disobedience, as what, you know, Extinction Rebellion exists to try to push to do. Telling the truth and acting now is what we're about here on this radio show. And you won't, that full scale of connecting the dots, you just won't hear in mainstream news media. You won't hear mainstream news media commentators talking about the necessity of nonviolent direct action in response to the gigantic ecological extinction crisis that we are in. Not facing
and
in the
they
future,
may tell you
but
to
go, in
they
now.
May tell you to vote, but they're not going to tell you to resist, and we're going to tell you to resist.
So if you like that, if that perspective should be on the airwaves from a bona fide radio station broadcasting tower, the way to keep that in existence is to give a little bit of money to WBAI, or a lot if you happen to have a lot. But they'll take a little bit is what you have.
Yeah, you can contribute as little as $5, even probably less, $5 a month, and sustain WBAI in that way, and continue to support Extinction Rebellion Radio and climate crisis news. You know, Matthew, I took a drive recently from Oakland to Quincy, California. It's about a 5-mile drive. And for the entire
five-mile drive.
That was a 5-hour drive. And so, it, you know, didn't feel like 5 minutes. I'm going to tell you that. But anyway, over 5 miles. When I got out of my car, there were no bugs on my grill. There were no bugs on my windshield. And, you know, nobody wants that. But the fact of the matter, that's a sign of a problem we are encountering. Scientific American reported back in April about a recent study on insect population decline, a study conducted by scientists at University College London in your neck of the woods. And what scientists found is that, quote, the combined influence of climate change and expanding agriculture are causing insect populations to plummet in some parts of the world. Areas with more intense agriculture like California, which typically involve more land degradation, more chemicals, more livestock, and less plant diversity, had greater insect declines than areas less intensely farmed. At the same time, warming caused greater decline in all areas, end quote. Now, why is that important? Well, one word, food. As Scientific American points out, insects, quote, pollinate plants, including agricultural crops, and also provide an important food source for other animals, end quote. It used to be I could take these 5-hour drives in California and just be smothered in dead bugs on my windshield and on my grill. And so, to see this kind of decimation is frightening and is something that we need to be talking about. And that's why it's so important to have Extinction Rebellion Radio, because we talk about these things that seem so, that are off people's radar screen. But, this little detail is really about a larger problem and the way in which climate change and, of course, agricultural practices are affecting our food supply.
You would normally have encountered quite a few bugs in this long drive from Oklahoma to California.
Oakland.
Oh, Oakland. I thought you said Oklahoma.
No. I might have said Oklahoma, but I did not drive from Oklahoma.
Whether you're driving from Oklahoma or Oakland, you would normally have encountered quite a few bugs on this trip. And in fact, you did not. They're dying off.
They're dying off.
They don't have the water. They don't have the food.
They don't. And so that means that other animals don't and other things don't have the food. About 20 years ago, I drove from Rochester, New York to Maryland, and I came by my nephew's house. My nephews are looking at the grill of my car and they're like, what happened to all the bugs? They were horrified to see so many bugs killed on the grill. And I explained to them, well, we're driving kind of fast. There's bugs all over the place. And this is what happens. That I haven't seen in decades. And again, I'm not advocating for dead bugs on the grill. I'm advocating for a sane climate policy an agricultural policy that doesn't kill off our pollinators.
Yeah, it's just an indication of the mass extinction event that we are in, as evidenced by that Scientific American report about declining insect populations, as just being one of hundreds of indicators that we could be talking about and that we do talk about on Extinction Rebellion Radio. So WBAI can bring you these kinds of perspectives. Our voices would not be in the way that they are on another type of radio station. So the very best way to give is to become a WBAI buddy. You can be a BAI buddy of a show. The straightforward way to do it for us would be to Google Extinction Rebellion Radio WBAI. And the first page that pops up on Extinction Rebellion Radio WBAI is our show page. And on that show page, you'll see a donation amount. You can select whatever amount works for you. A great point that Elise made, Elise has made like 12 great points, but one of the great points that Elise has made is that it can be either a monthly or a one-time contribution. So if $25 one time is what you have, then that's what they will be perfectly happy to take. If, on the other hand, you feel like you can give $25 a month or $5 a month or more, maybe you have $100 a month, whatever it is that is feasible that you have, you can enter that in a monthly amount. And it would be super duper if you clicked on the choose your favorite show and scrolled on down and selected the name of our show, which is listed there as either Extinction Rebellion Radio or XR Radio.
Well, the great thing about being a buddy is that you also signal to, the staff at WBAI that Extinction Rebellion Radio is important to you, that supporting news that addresses and commentary that addresses our climate crisis is important to you. So, be a buddy and let folks know that you want this to continue. You want to hear more about the climate crisis, not less. And you want to also be plugged into, folks who are on the streets and fighting for climate justice, for a sane climate policy, and for some sane climate choices.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on Pacifica Radio Network, brought to you through WBAI New York. This is Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. You know, maybe we should have mentioned this before, but this is a big one, folks. We have a special promotion for anybody who gives at least $25 and mentions Extinction Rebellion Radio as their favorite show. In other words, who becomes a BAI buddy of Extinction Rebellion. Elise, what can we give to these people?
Well, you can choose between two ebooks that I've written. One is called The Wretched of Mother Earth, The Handbook for Living, Dying, and Nonviolent Revolution in the Midst of Climate Change Catastrophe. And then there's another one, For Colored Girls at the End of Empire When Nonviolence is Not Enough. These are two ebooks that you can get. Both of them are really quick reads, but I think give a powerful punch around climate catastrophe.
Quick ebooks with long titles.
Yes. You read half of them after you read the title.
That's a very quick book indeed. And so what will happen is if you do become a WBAI buddy of Extinction Rebellion for $25 or more, then WBAI, the station, will contact you with the login information for those ebooks. And they're such fantastic titles. Elise, give us the titles again, please. They're so cool.
One is called The Wretched of Mother Earth, The Handbook for Living, Dying, and Nonviolent Revolution in the Midst of Climate Change Catastrophe. That's the older piece. And then there's For Colored Girls at the End of Empire When Nonviolence is Not Enough.
You can get one of these ebooks. You can pick which one you want if you can become a WBAI buddy of Extinction Rebellion. And even more important than that, you keep WBAI in existence. This is the listener-supported station in New York and is part of Pacifica Radio Network, which is the single listener-supported radio network in the United States. So please do help us out.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
And the previous program was Extinction Rebellion Radio, and that is heard Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI Evening News. Coming up at the 7 p.m. hour will be We Only Want the World with Sansara Taylor. That's coming up at the 7 p.m. hour. But all right, folks, you know what I'm going to do at this point. No need to be coy or try to be clever or try. No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. WBAI is in a campaign right now to raise money to sustain the bills for the transmitter as well as 388 Atlantic Avenue, and we're behind. We're behind. 2 months at the transmitter, 3 months at the studios at WBAI. WBAI has been a part of the fabric of the media landscape since 1960. It's been a pivotal part of progressive information giving throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, the aughts, the 10s, and now the 20s. And would like to continue that, but got to do it with the help of listeners like yourselves. We're all in this together, okay? 212-209-2950. Now, unlike some people who might not mention this on air, I'm not going to go into this hierarchical BS and say that it is the fault of this person or that person over there. This is a collective thing, okay? A collective form of responsibility. The reason why I am on this mic right now, that there is a shortcoming of sort, of not doing the job the way we should have been doing the job properly. Now, for longtime listeners, you know what I'm talking about. You know that we have been, in the past, successful fund drives. Back in the day, $1.2 million in 2 weeks.